be reminded of Hebrews 11 and verse 1. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That definition is the foundation of every step down through these many verses in Hebrews 11. We have completed the description of three heroes in the dispensation of conscience. And when we looked at these three heroes of faith, we were able to see how it worked in that time. Things were different in the dispensation of conscience than now. And so that involved Abel, Enoch, and Noah. Now we've moved on into the dispensation of promise. Last week I mentioned, essentially we skip acts of faith in the dispensation of human government. Sometimes I think we need a lot more faith when it comes to living under human government. Because of all of the things that are involved in it. But we don't have them listed here. Genesis 12, last week we saw Abraham was called out of Ur of the Chaldees, given a promise which did not materialize. He was not a believer, yet he went by the will of his father, from Ur to Haran. And from Ur to Haran, he stayed there for a period of over 60 years. Great act of faith, 60 years of sitting, waiting for Papa to die. And then God says, okay, Jehovah says, get moving. And he obeyed and went. And at that point, he still was an unbeliever in Haran. He did not believe until Genesis chapter 15, and he had come back into the land. To me, it's interesting, some of the controversy that I remember in the past related to whether an unbeliever can have faith or not. This created a problem when you see Abraham was an unbeliever, and he went by faith as an act of obedience. I know that was interesting in this section. And so we're looking at Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and Moses in the dispensation of promise. So these are heroes. It's interesting how the dispensation of promise exhibits faith in some very, very important ways. And God has given us that emphasis to give us these six individuals plus a group of people that is in the one big act of faith of Israel. And I still will be working on when we get there. When Israel crossed the Red Sea, they understood it was by faith that they went across the Red Sea. They didn't stir up a cloud of dust probably, but it was dry when they walked across the bottom of that sea. And so that is identified in verse 29 of chapter 11 as an act of faith. Abraham is identified by three acts of faith in Hebrews 11. The one we looked at last week was when he obeyed God, went to Canaan, and sojourned there. And so when he left Haran, now don't forget, he wasn't a spring chicken when he left Haran. He was 75 years old. And so he leaves with his nephew Lot, his wife Sarai, and all the stuff he had accumulated in Haran, and all of the slaves, the people that worked were under him. And he had a large number of people that went to Canaan. By the time he's been there a little while, he's got essentially an army of over 500 individuals. Men, males, trained to fight, plus all of the other people that were involved in his travel. That's a pretty good act of faith, wasn't it? All out of Haran. You've spent all these years there. You've got your roots there. You've accumulated everything. And then weren't able to call U-Haul because they didn't have U-Haul. So they had all kinds of animals which were used to transport and to locate them. Now, you realize when he left Haran, he did not have an address to which to go. He didn't have a house somewhere or an estate or property to which to go. And so when he left, that's what happened. He left it by faith. He didn't know where he was going, except generally. And then today we're going to look at verse 9, where it says, by faith he sojourned there. And what did he live in? Tents. Tents. And we're going to talk a little bit about tents. When you realize in the history of Israel how important tents really were, as far as they didn't have a house. He was looking for a city that had foundations and he didn't find it. And those foundations had to be, we're going to get into some of this momentarily. But land was promised. But you realize those promises were not fulfilled in Abram's lifetime. They were not fulfilled in Isaac's lifetime. They were not fulfilled in Jacob's lifetime. And the opportunity they had to have them fulfilled in Jacob's lifetime or Israel's lifetime was derailed thanks to the events at Sinai. Had they believed God, there was a good possibility the promises would have been fulfilled. But rather they wanted to earn something that God wanted to give them as a gift. And they didn't want to believe. And it's funny, they had faith at the Red Sea, but at Sinai they had no faith at all. They figured they could handle it. That independence of individuals. Then we have an interesting thing here in the 11, because our next person is not a hero of faith, but a heroine. And her name is Sarah. And the more I've studied Sarah in this segment, it's been rather interesting, because she's more interesting than many people understand. She's the only woman clearly identified by name in Hebrews 11. Under some very, very, very unusual circumstances. And so she is identified because, and then we go back to the Old Testament, it's interesting, her attitude. It says by faith that she received power to conceive at the age of 90. That's pretty close to double the age of menopause. 90 years old on it. And it was really kind of funny reading some of the commentaries. They said, here's this shriveled up little old lady that probably doesn't walk straight up. And she's told she's going to have a baby. I mean, the terrible twos and the terrible threes. You can imagine this very thing. And so that's what happens with her. And by faith, she considered the one who made the promise. Remember how she heard the promise? Father Abraham kept the promise close to his vest. He had been told before the three messengers arrived at the Oaks of Mamre near Machpelah. And when these three spirit beings arrived, one of which was this angel of Jehovah, the other two were there, they said, where's Sarah? Sarai. It was Sarai. No, that was Sarah that we had. It was 17 where her name was changed. Where's Sarah? In the tent. She's a good Jewish, a good woman there. She's where she should be, in the tent. You know, I've heard them say that, so I have to parrot it. And she's in the tent. And so what happens? They tell him, Your wife says, you know, he's right, she's right behind him in the door of the tent, listening in to this conversation. And they say she's going to conceive and bear a child. You know what scripture says? It says she laughed in her heart. And Jehovah approached her and said, "You laughed, didn't you?" And she said, "No, I didn't." Why did she do that? Because she was afraid to admit it. And there are a lot of questions. Why did she laugh? You know, did she? It was an act and laugh of unbelief, an act of seeing some humor in something that she wasn't certain about. It's rather interesting. And but she realized the one who promised it had the ability to make things happen that could have never happened without it. And that's exactly what happened. I've often wondered if she wasn't given some youthfulness beyond just the ability to conceive and to bear a child and to survive a pregnancy. I've wondered if she didn't get a little more acid in her battery so she could chase that two-year-old. I just don't know. It's really, really interesting. They probably have a lot of people doing that, able to do it. I was reading about somebody this week where they had a child. And they had a nursemaid, a maid who handled his child from infancy up. The child was so slow in speaking. And what was rather interesting, the first words of the child were spoken in Spanish and not in English, because the nursemaid always spoke in Spanish. And, that child became, I think, a general in the army at one point, in that matter. Okay, let's look at verse 9. Verse 9 is back before this page. By faith, he, Abram, sojourned in a strange country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. It was necessary today to put almost an extension of that little handout I did last week of those dates that come out of scripture, those ages, and we'll have it in here so you can see. The overlap. How many years overlap do you think there was between the birth of the twins, that is Esau and Jacob, and the death of Abraham? Have you ever thought of it? It's calculable. It's really interesting because there's 15 years overlap. So they had a few years of grandpa when he lived to be 175 years old. We don't know what his condition was. We know what Isaac's condition was when he got old, because he could not see. And so he couldn't tell. He could smell okay. I didn't say he smelled okay. It said he could smell okay. And he could feel. So he had a couple of senses that were working. But he couldn't see the difference between Esau and Jacob. And you remember that story. But Abraham at 175, he had 15 years with Jacob and Esau. And you remember the description of those two? Esau was a man of the field, and Jacob was a man of tents. Oops, we got a tent word again in this. And so it becomes very, very interesting as we relate to these individuals here in this section. Now, by faith Abraham, by faith he sojourned. The word sojourn is a term that has the idea of living as a stranger. To live as a stranger. It's interesting that term is used, and I want to go to a place that is interesting for me, and that is in 1 Chronicles 29. I can hardly open my Bible to 1 Chronicles 29 without reading a verse a little before where we're going. In 29 and verse 15, I'm going to read that verse because I enjoy that verse so much. David is speaking, and what does he say as they make Solomon king? Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord, and thou art exalted as head above all. That's verse 11 in 1 Chronicles 29. 1 Chronicles 29, 15 says, for we are strangers. The word stranger is a participle, continually strangers before thee, before your face. And sojourners, and the word sojourners comes from the word to dwell, as were all our fathers. This is telling us something. By the Davidic era, when he turns the kingdom over to Solomon, they still understood they were temporarily, they hadn't received the promises. We were all sojourners. Our days on earth are as a shadow. There is none about abiding. None abiding. The word abiding is a word, mikvah, which is a word, no expectation. It's like tikvah, which is a Jewish national anthem. The hope. There's no expectation or hope. So it's interesting. The seed of Abraham didn't get that land. They have to wait. And we fall in between, thanks to some of that presumption. We fall in between. The end of the 69 weeks of Daniel, we become a part of that parenthesis. And that becomes a part of what happens here. But he sojourned in the land of promise. He knew some of that land was promised back when he started, when he got there from Haran. But it wasn't until Genesis chapter 15 that he found out how big that property would be. From the river of Egypt to the river Euphrates. A huge piece of land. And he knew that's what it was, but they never inherited it. They never inherited very much of a percentage of it. When we understand. And so they moved to this country that was really their, going to be their homeland. But what happens? It was a strange, foreign, alien country. They came in with a lot of alien different peoples as they came in and they dwelt in tents. They dwelled in tents. That was a manner of life with them, like foreigners. In a temporary habitation. Tents. I'm a guy, so I have a streak of guyness in me. Our dad had a pup tent. That was the greatest thing. It was a pup tent that probably had military origin. It had two halves. And you put them on posts. And you attached the halves. And there was no floor. And you staked it. We thought that was the greatest thing. I mean, I almost remember that probably. One of my earliest memories was that pup tent. It was so great. In that matter. Then as time went along, I guess it went along a long time, really, in a way. I got a pup tent and it had a floor in it. And that was really cool. In fact, I still have it in my garage, I think. Then we went to Bible camp. And in Bible camp, we got to stay and we thought it was wonderful. They didn't have dormitories. They had Army surplus tents and army surplus bunk beds on wooden platform. And I think there were probably, it would probably house about a dozen kids or more in these bunk beds. And it was just wonderful. When it got hot, you rolled up the sides. We tents were great. And then, as I got older, we got a tent. I still have that tent too, where we go camping. But as we got older, the ground got too hard. You know, I mean, we didn't have these blow up queen size beds. And it wasn't always the best, and it's been many, 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 many years since we've used the tent. I say we. I was not the first one to say not to use the tent. But that was a temporary place to dwell. To go tent camping and to come home to the house and the bed. That meant something, didn't it? You know, I mean, sometimes... I learned as a kid you had to find the right way to sleep on a rock. I mean, if you could get adjusted to the rock, you could make it through a night. But if you slept on it the wrong way, you didn't, and you'd think about it. But you were camping. That's what counted. These people camped all their lives, as it were. All their lives they camped. They were in temporary dwelling, in this matter. And so, he was there with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The promise was made to all of them. It says he heirs with him of the same promise. Then it goes on in verse 10, and it says he was waiting to welcome. He could hardly wait to have a solid place to live. How long do tents last? I had highly hoped to be able to see some nomadic or Bedouin tents in Israel when I went over. They don't sleep in tents much anymore. They sleep in shacks. Down in the Negev in the southern part of Israel, I think they still. And what they do, they make their tents out of black goat's hair. The physics don't work really well. I haven't figured out these countries. The Tuareg and the tribe in the Sahara, they wear dark, black, purple robes. The dye is a purple dye. These are purple guys because the dye from their robes in the perspiration. And you, man, that just soaks up heat. Why don't they wear white robes? And the same is true of a lot of the Middle East where there's that issue. But here, the need for having a tent, a lot of the tents was what they could come up with. They didn't have a lot of light-colored tents to reflect it. And we're not going to get into the interesting science of some of the things over there. Now, they didn't have air conditioning in that country, in those countries, and some of the Middle East was running summers at 120, 130 degrees. But they had their own kind of air conditioning. And that's interesting. But he was looking for a city that had foundation, that actually had foundation. When you have a foundation of a city in the Middle East at that time, what were you talking about? You were talking about a city that had walls. A city that was defended and defensible. And the idea of a foundation that was impregnable when an enemy came. But this city was interesting because he was looking for two things. That is, he wanted to have the right kind of, and I'll read the King James, the right kind of builder and the right kind of maker. Now, I'm peeking. Priscilla is watching my notes. And so she could probably figure that Greek word out because on D2B, the word builder is an artisan or designer. Okay, I'm going to read it. Technikos. They let the arche off the front. Architect. Arche is the front. Numero uno, designer. So there's, and I say that because I'm not picking on Priscilla. That's just where she is. I mean, she's had that training. That kind of an idea. That one came right out of it. Then the next term, the idea of artisan or designer, The next term is, it's maker, but it's really creator. You look at that, and if you've had any exposure to some Middle Eastern, religion, Middle Eastern or otherwise, the demiurge. Have you ever heard of that term? That's this word. It was a word used for creator from the Greek. So the one who was the creator was who? Is the God. He wanted the best city possible because God promised it. So he stayed intense waiting for that to happen. Last week we saw that he went into the land from Haran and he wandered around a great deal. He went to the site of Samaria, then, which is 30 miles north of Jerusalem. He was over in the space between Bethel and the Jordan River, which would be a little bit more than 10 miles north of present-day Jerusalem, out in the eastern plateau of Palestine. Very interesting location. It's not exactly very, there are people living in that area now. They hadn't for years because it's not very habitable. Then he went down to the Negev, that is, he went to the south. And that was a distance away. How far south he went, we don't know. But what we do know was that there was a famine and he ends up in Egypt at that point in time. He was looking around, trying to find a place. God said, I've given you land, but you're going to have to wait for it. And so by faith, Abram was involved there. Now this leads me, and I put material in your notes that demonstrate the fact from the Old Testament that they lived in tents. I have a list of six different things, headers. Jacob lived in the tent when he left Haran. That takes us back to Genesis chapter 12 and verse 8. And in Genesis 12:8, this is a simple statement. I don't need to exhaust this, so I did put it in here because when I do a synopsis, I will do it. It says, and he, Abram, moved from thence into a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. See, that tells us he's on that western plateau up above the Jordan River, up in that area there. And kind of an extension of the Judean desert. And there he built an altar and called upon the name of the Lord. So he pitched his tent. That's right out of the box, right out of Haran when he gets into the land. In 13:3 it says, he went on his journeys even from the south even to Bethel. Oops, that's not what I wanted. I thought I had a tent verse there, and I don't have 10 in there. Okay. But you can see, when he went in, Lot had tents. Lot and Abram were living in tents until Lot moved. Where did Lot move to? Friendly little town called Sodom. And he lived in a house. How do I know it's a house? Because I read the story. Because when those three messengers showed up, or the two messengers showed up in Sodom, they tried to break down the door of his house. Remember, that was a great story, wasn't it? How these weirdos in Sodom were hustling these two angels, and God struck them blind. They couldn't find the door. They couldn't find a way to break down the house to get to them. And so it was an interesting story, but he moved into a house in Hebron. That is, Hebron is the city we used to always call it Hebron. It's up by Machpelah, by the Oaks of Mamre. I have on my wall right now, or right above my desk, a calendar that has a picture of the traditional grave of the patriarchs in Hebron. And it's, but he lived in tents all the time he was there. In fact, when those individuals showed up to see Abram in 18 of Genesis, these three spirit beings, he was sitting in his tent in Hebron. He's sitting in the entrance of his tent, and Elohim shows up and has a little discussion with him. And that's where Sarah heard about this, in this matter. Jacob lived in tents. The nation of Israel lived in tents. It's always interesting when you think of the Exodus and tent city and its movement as they moved. And I have a lot of that scripture here, and I don't need to go there. Now, this next section in my outline, if you happen to be looking on one, to be kind of dovetails with that handout I gave you last week. Abram died 75 years after the birth of Isaac, and that's just a statement. It's off of that chart. Genesis 11 says that Isaac was 40 years old when he married Rebekah. Now, remember, Sarah had died, and Isaac was heartbroken. And so Abram sent a slave, Abimelech, to go and fetch a bride for Isaac back in Haran. And so Rebekah came and filled in the place for mom for Isaac. And what did he do? He took Rebekah into the tent that his mother had lived in. Kind of an interesting, again, it was a tent. Did Rebekah live in tents? I am not so sure that that was the case. I don't know. Isaac was 60 years old. That means there were about 20 years before they had any kids when the twins were born. When I say twins, I'm talking about Jacob and Esau. In that. And so Abram was about 160. You can see I'm tagging along here because I want to show you that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob overlapped. And it was probable, it was without a question in my mind that Jacob knew Abraham. And he probably had interesting memories of his grandfather in that matter. Isaac died at 180. He lived 105 years after the death of Abraham. It was 15 years. That's the note that I made mention of earlier. 15 years after the birth of the twins. So we had a chance to get acquainted. This promise, remember, what it says here in Hebrews 11 is, this promise was good for not just Abraham, but for Isaac and Jacob. And he says it over and over and over in the Old Testament. I made a promise and it's going to happen. And that was the focus. Now, I kind of, in my notes, had to drop Sarah in here somewhere. Sarah died at 127 years old. That's 28 years before Abram. And so she died. Abram, what? After she died, he married a woman named Keturah. By her, he had six sons. We don't have a list of any. We don't have a record of daughters. There were six sons. I've given you that passage. Now, why did I put this in here? Because it's interesting what Hebrew says is it was those that he was dead. It's a masculine in Hebrews. To have kids, that it was like he had gone past the time. He may have just plain lost all of his desire to have a relationship if he was capable. We know that he produced Ishmael before. But he still was fertile myrtle when he got down to marrying Keturah. So we understand, myrtle is a female name, isn't it? I can't come up with an option there. Anyway, we know that Abram died when he was 100 years after he left Haran. But it's really interesting because these are facets of where we are. I put Sarah in here late because I'm coming to Sarah right now. And I want to touch or deal with her and her faith. What do we know about Sarah? Ladies, I don't know what you think of Sarah. I haven't verified it, but I have heard it said. And I've read it said, and I have it, in fact, I even have it up here in a stack of paper, that she is the only woman in the Old Testament that had her age listed. She didn't. She has her age listed twice. It says she was 90 years old when all this came down. That's important. She wasn't trying to hide her age of 90 years old because God wanted to use that as an exclamation point to know what God could do and what she accepted by faith. Then we also have the record of the fact that she died, and her age at her death was 127, and I've given you the passages if you want to hustle it. So Sarah, by faith. Now, in Genesis 17, we have a double name change. Genesis 17, Abram no longer was Abraham. It has been really difficult for me in doing the structure here, and I put Abram in where it is in the Old Testament rather than just follow the Abraham of the New Testament. I mean, he's looking at the same guy, but there's a difference in time. In 17, that is the second Abrahamic covenant, 24 years after the covenant of chapter 15, he has his name changed. He went from Avram to Abraham, the father of a multitude, is his new name. Sarai became Sarah. Sarah is a feminine form of the word for prince. So a princess. Sarai probably was an archaic term that meant to be persistent in that matter. And so 17 was where God said, Abram, your wife is going to bear a child at age 90. And I want you to know this, that Ishmael is not your seed. And it's amazing. Jacob was just, Abraham was a little old to be having a controversy with God over this. And he tried to argue with God to let Ishmael be the seed. He didn't really believe God like Sarah did. Evidently, he did not tell her what God had told him. But she had to hear it from God himself behind the door of the tent and find out that she's going to become a mother. The dream that she had had for so long and had long forgotten. Long forgotten. They probably had tried over and over and expected it, and she turns over her Egyptian maid, Hagar, and lets him produce a child by Hagar. And that God did that for purpose. I'm reminded of the Galatians. Remember what Galatians says? It says, the child of the free woman is better than the child of the bond woman. And he uses that to show the difference between law and grace. And I see that. I'm not being allegorical there. That's just the case because it's used there. And so what happens through faith, she received power. Received strength is the way it's translated in the King James. It's dunamis. It's the word for power. So Sarah had this act by which she received power at a point in time, and so she could conceive and birth a baby and go through the whole pregnancy without having a big problem. It's really interesting when you think of that. And I don't, all of this, the stories, Pat used to say when she talked to other women, that women had their pregnancy war stories and guys had regular war stories. Because there were more stories about going through that, and I used to smile because she was a pretty wise lady in that, and it may have been so. I just was glad I wasn't in any of those war story meetings in that. But going through all of that, the threats and the difficulties that exist, pretty sad to me, the mortality rate that is in our country right now compared to a lot of the world. We have infant mortality rate that's a little bit higher than a lot of third world countries. And part of it's because, well, God knows in that. But she conceived and then she birthed. Now, I have a note because it says she conceived and was delivered of a child. That's the word to bear a child or to birth a child. It deals with an event. There is a textual problem here. And so I put it here, made a note on it. Some say it's only because of two big Alexandrian manuscripts. It's kind of a mix. But it's obvious if you conceive, you're going to birth one way or another. And that's what happened. And the reason that was so spectacular was even beyond the time of age is a literal way it's translated. That is beyond the time of fertility. Beyond the time of fertility. It was not possible, and they understood enough of that, that there was a time where you could not have kids after a certain age. And that's called, in modern nomenclature, menopause. After that, it was very unusual for anything like that to happen. At 90 years old, wow. You know, everything is, remember, we start dying pretty young. And as we age, death carries it. I mean, we are trading off cells that are not as strong as they were before in that matter. And so it goes on and says that she, because she judged him faithful who had promised, she considered him. The word judge is not a good word. It was in her mind that he was going to be reliable, and that's the word faithful. She counted it to be so, but it's not legitimate, because he made a promise and he was one that she would believe. And so she believed in this, that he would keep his promise. Boy, that's a pretty interesting thing, isn't it? That he would tell her that she was going to have a child, that meant that he was going to handle the whole thing, from conception to birth. You know, I really believe that by faith that Sarah believed not only through birth, but through those first years where the little old lady was going to have to raise the 2-year-old. You know, I think she understood that God was going to sustain her so she could enjoy having a child in her old age. And so she had this faith. It happened because he was reliable. He was faithful. When he said it, it was going to happen. And so what happens, of course, it says, therefore, sprang there even of one guy. The word sprang came into being. It was something unique where this happens. And at a specific point in time, this came into being. God intervened in the life of Sarah and of Abraham. Often there is concern when a child is born to a father who is old. And what they're concerned about is the genetics and the viability of the genetics, as to whether this child will have the best genetics because the father is so old. Historically, that was an interesting case where fathers would be in their 70s and 80s and 90s and produce offspring by women they married that were 30. And there was always a wonder. Modern medicine has the same kind of wonder. And so God intervened in it. And the fact that it says here, and it's frustrating to some, when it says that Abram was as good as dead. As good as dead. He'd been around so long, he was in a state of being as though he was dead. He may have lost his desire let alone his capability to produce offspring. Because if you have no desire and you don't bring it to fruition, it's not going to happen. And so it says is that he might as well have been dead in that matter. But then he brings up something that comes later in Scripture after this event, or, well, it really came before, because of the promise of Genesis chapter 15, that so many as the stars of the heavens, or the sky, in multitude, let's translate it, it's of the heaven, it's a singular there. Sky is not a great translation, in multitude, and as the sand which is by the lip of the sea, innumerable. Boy, there's some fun words here. The word arithmetic is in that word, innumerable. It's anarithmetos, something you couldn't count. And so this comes directly out of other passages. I went ahead and I put this in your this in the notes, just so if you follow through, if you get the synopsis, you'll get most of these passages anyway. I'll throw them in on it if I can get there on that. Now, this leads me to want to go to a minor prophet. I don't always have chances to go to minor prophets. Hosea chapter 1. First of the minor prophets is Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, etc. But in Hosea chapter 1 and verse 10, it says, "Yet the number of the sons of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered." This is two different terms. "And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, you are not my people," and this is Hosea, "there it shall be said, you are the sons of the living God." Interesting description. Hosea, late, the problems he had. There were two kids named in that section. One of them was called Lo-Ami, not my people. Lo-Ami, not my people. But he says it's going to happen. They're going to be like this. Now, let's go to the Old Testament for a moment. I might make this after all. I'm trying to hurry. I don't want to be bogged down, but I don't want to be as old as Abraham was when he died before I get done with this. No. Anyway, Genesis 17, 18, and 21 are keys here. In Genesis 18, the promise of a son was by Sarah is made in the second occurrence. This happens to be, let's go back to 17, Genesis 17. I'm not going to read all of this because it's too much. But in Genesis 17, verse 1, "When Abraham was 99 years old, the Lord was seen or appeared to Abraham and said unto him, I am El Shaddai, walk before me and be thou perfect. And I will make a covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. And Abraham fell on his face, and God talked with him." Abraham fell on his face. I had to read that because I know where I'm going with this. Abraham falls on his face a little bit later here in this matter. And so we have the first, or the second Abrahamic covenant in verses, in this section down through verse 8. Then we have the covenant of circumcision, which is the third Abrahamic covenant, in verses 9 down through verse 14. And he changes Sarah's name in verse 15. "And God said unto Abraham, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall be her name. And that I have a center column, they say princess, a feminine prince, princess. I will bless her. He's explaining why he's calling her that. I will bless her and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be the mother of nations, and kings of people shall be of her. Then Abraham fell upon his face. Told you I had to read that before. He fell on his face when God showed up, and then when God says, your wife is going to bear you a son, he falls right flat on his face, and what does he do? He Isaac'd. That's what it says. It says, he fell upon his face, and he Isaac'd. He laughed. The word is Yitzhak. That's the name Isaac. It comes from this verb. It's a masculine, singular form. Now, see, aren't you glad that he laughed? Poor Isaac would have been strapped if it had just been Sarah that laughed. Because then his name would have been Titzhak instead of Yitzhak. And that would have been something. That's like a boy named Sue. And that. But that's where his name comes from. And he said in his heart, shall a child be born unto him that is 100 years old? Oh, I thought I would not ever have to worry about that. We've given up on this thing. And shall Sarah that is 90 years old bear a birth? See, there's her name, number. There's a number. It tells you how old she was. Here's a gal that got her number exposed, her age exposed. And what does Abram say? Abram said unto God, oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. What does God say right back? And God said, Sarah, thy wife shall bear to thee, Abram, a son indeed. And thou shalt call his name Yitzhak. See the context? And I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant and with his seed after him. The same covenant. Now, which covenant? It's probably 15. It will involve 17 early, the first and second Abrahamic covenants. And so he says, this is what's going to happen. And then he gives Ishmael some positive feed here. And so here you have Abram falling on his face. Was he and laughing? Now, did he go nuts? Just thought it was so funny, a big joke, or did he not have faith? He couldn't fathom it, and he just throws God an option, and God slaps him back in the face and says, I said it, it's going to happen. And so Abram had to worry about starting to provide for another child beside Ishmael, plus all the servant children. Now, over in, I went through there. Got to go down to 21. Let's do 21. We're doing pretty good with this. 21, what happens? And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. That's interesting, the word visited. He came, the word visit is used in a number of ways in Hebrew, and it's that he personally was involved in a work in Sarah's life that brought to pass that which he had promised. And by faith she accepted, because she accepted who he was. For Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. At the set time, within a year of the promise, it happened. That very day, he pops a kid. And Abraham called the name of his son born unto him, whom Sarah bore unto him, Isaac. Now, this wasn't written to counter Islamic tradition in the Quran. This was written long before the Koran. You know what they say? It was the one who received it was Ishmael. It wasn't Isaac. It's the seed of Sarah. Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. Now I can't resist reading the next section. There's kind of interesting. There's quite a bit of laughing going on here. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh. 90 years and saying, no, I'll never have a child. And she dreamt of having a child. And God, I'm sure, just made, it says he made me to laugh so that all that hear will laugh with me. And you see this gal with this, are you the great grandma? No, this is my child. No. I can see that. And she sees it this way. And then in verse 7, and she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah would be given, would have given children to suck? For I am, have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew, and he was weaned. And Abram made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. Too bad the kid couldn't enjoy his party. I say that because usually they were weaned between 2 and 3 years old on it, though I understand in some parts of the world it's later. So there's our story. By faith, Sarah produced Isaac for Abraham, fulfilling, establishing the promises of God. Now, we talk about faith being the substance of things hoped for. Sarah? Well, let's start with Abraham since he sojourned. His hope was to be able to have a city where he had a place to live, not having to live in tents anymore. He wanted a solid place to live. And never got it. When Abram died, he was still living in tents. He was living in Haran in tents. Sarah, there's no promise of a child except the natural reproductive possibilities. And so she lost hope because she knew it couldn't happen. But she had hope. He had hoped that it would happen to her, and it hadn't. And so all of a sudden here, that hope comes to fruition, and she is a mother of a child. Wouldn't it have been fun to have known Sarah after Isaac was born? And to talk about proud motherhood. All of those years of experience, and then here she is a proud mama. That's going to be just awesome when you think about that. Then we stop. And we just finished a week. It was an interesting week, wasn't it? You know, it was a week where you have Tuesday, which was an election day. I trust that you looked at that through the eyes of faith, that God is going to permit whatever's going to happen. And if it went your way or somebody else's way, and it didn't make any difference to me on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or Saturday or today, and they still have a finished count in some election, a recount. My faith, the best part of it is my faith is that I didn't even expect to be here today. You know, I expected to be long gone. You know, I figured the Lord would be back and we'd all have our great meeting there. We're fortunate today to be where we are and to have the freedom we have. And to be reminded on a day that was known as Armistice Day, that is now known as Veterans Day, that we have some privileges that unfortunately many people take for granted, and many people forget how many lives were lost for those freedoms. And by faith, we realize that God permitted it all. Yesterday, I heard a marching band play America the Beautiful. And then the songs of All the Branches. It's been a while since I heard the Marine hymn. And Anchors Away. And those very things. It made me proud to be an American. But not only that, made me proud to be a son of God, because I know he's got it all figured out. So we have these two people. We're going off of names next week because the next four verses don't have specific names, but it deals with what Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is where the names really are here when we get into this next section in Hebrews 11. Father, may you guide us and bless us and direct us, and may our fellowship be sweet as we share in the time between services. We'll thank you in Christ's name.